This is the Unconquered Podcast, unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
In Florida State,
we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
Welcome back to Season 2 of the Unconquered Podcast. We're going to continue talking today about Florida State's preseason camp, talk a little bit more about the offensive side of the football today. Again, Wayne McGahee will be joining us, talking a lot about the first scrimmage and how things have looked over the first week and a half. So without further ado, we're joined once again by Wayne McGahee of NoleDigest.com. Wayne, good to have you back with us. Today we're going to talk a little bit more about the offense. We'll also bring up a couple defensive things, but let's go ahead and start. The concern on the offensive side coming into this year is really, I mean, there's only one place to potentially be concerned, and that's at the wide receiver position, where you know everybody else basically returned. You know, obviously the loss of Brian Stork at center is a big deal. But you know you've got a senior in Barron who has been good in previous stints there, so you don't really worry about that. Especially since you know they've got some other options there. I mean they're so deep now on the offensive line, which it's been a long time since we could say that at Florida State. But basically the position that everybody's been concerned about is the wide receiver position, where you lose a first round draft pick in Kelvin Benjamin, and you lose a guy who at this point is on an NFL roster in the preseason in Kenny Shaw, who had a clutch year all year. So what so far are we seeing at the wide receiver position?
Well, we're seeing right now what we're seeing is, you know, we have Rashad Green. He's probably one of the, going to end his career as one of the best wide receivers in Florida State history overall. Kid's been great, and he has one spot locked down. The other two spots are up for grabs, and what you're seeing is Kermit Whitfield and Jesus Wilson. You're going to see you're seeing them in the slot battle it out. Right now, Kermit's running with the first team, but that might have to do with Wilson's lingering suspension, so we're not exactly sure how that would that's going to shake out. I would bet that Wilson takes over that spot once the suspension is lifted. And then you have the outside spot, which is where it's really interesting, because right now you have Christian Green, fifth-year senior, former five-star All-American. Everybody loved him, who faded.
Yeah, talent's never been the issue.
People were surprised to find out he was still on the roster. And he's looked great so far this fall camp. During the scrimmage today, he ended the scrimmage with around a 35-yard touchdown reception. So he's there. And the person who's pushing him right now is Ermin Lane. Ermin Lane got some time with the first team today. And during the two tight end sets, he was the lone wide receiver on the field. So that tells me that Jimbo and Dossie think he is the most physical wide receiver they have out there right now for blocking.
Yeah, which, I mean, that says a lot about a freshman. Generally speaking, you don't count on freshmen to be your physical blockers in the running game. Usually that's the part that has to come later. And I think, you know, there are a couple, you've said a lot here in terms of what's going on. I think, you know, the other bit of news here is signs of life from Christian Green. I mean, he flashed so much ability as a freshman, and then, as you said, he faded, and a lot of it was just seemed to be a complete loss of confidence, where you know some of the younger guys passed him up, you know, Kelvin and some of these guys passed him up, and you know he couldn't, and then there was also the fact that he just couldn't catch a break at one point. I mean, last year, I mean, it became a running joke that if there was a bubble screen that was going to go to Christian Green, he was going to be getting up talking out of his ear hole because he had, you know, it just the worst luck with it, with the blockers. Kelvin Benjamin, who is a great blocker on bubble screens all year, it seemed like he missed every block. I mean, it seemed like he had a personal
Christian Green stole Kelvin Benjamin's girlfriend sometime during the last year. That's the only explanation.
It seemed like there was a personal vendetta because, man, they just...
he got him killed multiple times. Just, and, you know, but Benjamin was the best blocker on the team. You know, the only time that he ever missed a block was when Christian Green was
he got him
doing bubble screens.
So many times. It's like, oh no, we got a bubble screen. Oh no, that's to Christian. Oh God, no, please. Just over and over again. You'd just see it. You'd feel for the guy because, I mean, you'd see all the green grass that if the block had been made, you know, he might have scored. But instead, he's getting up and he's, you know, you're worried about a concussion. So, you know, that was his junior year. But, you know, it seems like over the summer and at this point, he's really stepped forward. And like I said, he was Ermin Lane or one of these guys, you know, coming in with the five-star fanfare as a freshman, and then it just hasn't panned out. But talent has never been the issue for him. I mean, I remember sitting with Lawrence Dossey in 2009 talking to him about some of the young receivers. You know, and at that point you had Willie Halstead and Smith as, you know, a couple of the young guys, and then Green was, you know, in that next class. And I remember him talking. I had asked him about Green because I'd really liked Green's tape in high school, and I'd asked him about it. And you know, I remember him saying, "Oh man, he could be as good as he wants to be. I mean, he's faster than Burt." Talking about Burt Reed, I mean, he's faster than Burt, and he's, you know, 210, 215. I mean, he's a big guy, and he can really move that way. And for those of you, you know, who remember how fast Burt Reed was, you know, he's not a slow receiver. Christian Green, according to Lawrence Dossey at that time, was faster than Burt Reed. So talent's never been the issue. And if he steps forward and all of a sudden starts to be in the right places and get some confidence, well, geez. I mean, you have a reclamation project that could really make you a lot better. And the thing is, he's always been able to make the spectacular catch. But there's a point where, you know, he wasn't always in the right spots, and he couldn't seem to stay on his feet at different points as well. I mean, it was like, you know, the turf monster had something out for him at one point as well. So we'll see how that goes. But the other part that you're mentioning is, you know, Ermin Lane getting first team snaps. We addressed that a little bit. The other guy that you didn't mention that hasn't been out there as much because his foot's been sore since the surgery, but he was actually with the first team before Ermin Lane was Travis Rudolph. And
absolutely. Rudolph, before, at the beginning of fall practice, you know, Rudolph was full tilt and he looked great. He was running in sometimes for the first team. He looked great in drills, just a natural pass catcher, just looked fantastic. Well, his foot injury that he had surgery on during the summer, right when he got to Florida State, kind of got irritated a little bit. They, you know, checked nothing, like none of the tendons or anything that they had to repair were messed up again. So he's fine. It's just a little irritation. So Jimbo and them are holding him out until he's fully ready to go. Jimbo said that they might have let him do a little too much because he's that competitive. But when he's on, there's no better route runner on the team. He reminds me of a combination of Kenny Shaw and Rashad Green. He's just so reliable, and his routes are so crisp. They're just, yeah, he's going to be a really good one.
I'm going to be a little bit of a wet blanket here in terms of being maybe pedantic in talking about being a great route runner. He's very sharp, but he hasn't quite learned to be a great route runner yet. He can be a great route runner, but, and you know, when you say he's as good a route runner as there is on the team, I'm a little hesitant about that yet because, again, he's got a sharpness, a crispness there that you have to be a great route runner. But there are the finer things that some of the vets do have. So when you look at Rashad Green as a route runner, there are times where he's actually not as crisp, but it's actually a better route when you know the art of setting up a defensive back and some of these things. You know, some of these veterans, you know, there's different levels of learning how to run routes. And, you know, you learn to run it crisply. You learn to run it eventually so that you're consistent on your yardage every time. you know, that's a critical thing for the Fisher offense, is to make sure you're in the spot you're supposed to be in all the time. Because in Fisher's offense, the quarterback isn't always looking at you when he's throwing to you. He's throwing to a spot, and you dang well better be in that spot. Otherwise, everything goes to hell. So you can't really let that happen. You've got to make sure that these guys are going to be in those spots. So far, the freshman receivers are going to be in those spots. The next level, though, this is the graduate level stuff that you're seeing from guys like Rashad Green at this point. It's things like varying your speed subtly, raising your pads just a little bit in this part of the route to suggest that you're going to make this break and then breaking the other way. Things like that. Those are places that a lot of fans and a lot of people that watch the game and even know the game don't see, but they make the difference. That's why a guy like Anquan Boldin can have lost basically a step or two in the NFL and is still next to uncoverable when he needs to get open. Because you learn to vary your speed, you learn to get your body on a guy, you learn to do some of that stuff. And I don't think Rudolph is quite there, but as far as the rest of it, boy, he looks pretty in pads when he's running around, doesn't he?
He does. And I think that, everything that you're talking about is just going to be, let's see how to put this. The more that Rudolph learns the playbook, the more that he's going to be able to do that stuff. I think
he'll be there by a sophomore year.
So, but he's going to be really good. I wouldn't be surprised to see him and Rudolph and Rashad, Rudolph, Lane, and Rashad as your starting wide receivers halfway through the season. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about that is, you know, who goes in the slot? It's probably Rudolph there in the slot at that point. But I actually think more often than not, you're going to end up seeing Bobo in the slot as, you know, as the primary slot as the year goes on. Once his suspension is up, I think he's going to be your primary slot with Whitfield being used in that role a good bit as well, particularly when they go four wide. But I think you're going to see Whitfield in kind of that Trendon Holiday role. Fisher always likes to have, you know, a few plays for those guys.
Going to see Whitfield coming out of the backfield quite a bit.
Well, and they also practiced last year. They practiced that little jet sweep action to Whitfield, particularly in out of the shotgun look, where you got a guy coming across in motion. You got Whitfield coming across in motion from the slot when the ball snapped, and then he takes that handoff around the edge. They practiced that a good bit last year and never really brought it out in games because they just flat didn't need it. But
I think the first time he touched the ball from a running back position, he went 74 yards. To the house. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we'll see some of that with Kermit this year. I think that this is where I'm much more bullish about the situation at receiver than most, because I think you're going to see a lot more explosiveness from the wide receivers in general, where last year, you know, you could rely on a lot of consistency from the receivers. And I think that probably takes a little bit of a step back this year. But, you know, I think there's going to be a high level of consistency with the group that they have. I think Bobo is a consistent player. I think Scooter Hagans is going to be, you know, a guy that is going to be able to take, that role over the middle that Kenny Shaw was able to take at different points. I think he'll be valuable in some of those spots. I think that, you know, they're just a little faster and more explosive across the board than they were last year, where you just had to worry about Kelvin's size. And, you know, Kenny wasn't running away from people, but, you know, he was constantly in the right spot, and, you know, Jameis knew where he was going to be and could throw him open. But I think with this group, you know, you're going to start seeing bubble screens taken to the house by Kermit. You're going to start seeing, you know, a little smash route, a little flag route, and that all of a sudden turns into 60 because you've got a guy that can really run. That's creating that. So I think that's where the passing game is going to be a little different this year. Maybe not quite as high of a completion percentage, but maybe a little bit more of a downfield, you know, more of a big play threat this year than what you saw last year. Now the completion percentage could stay the same if Winston does get better at checking the ball down. And Lord knows he has the running backs to do it, which we'll talk about in just a minute. But yeah, and I guess the other guy to talk about in terms of the wide receivers that we really haven't talked about is the other freshman with Javon Harrison, who, you know, he's obviously not as ready, not quite as developed as the other two. But what have you seen there?
Right now, he's also not participating with Rudolph, which is really going to hold him back. But he has a small concussion, so he's not participating either. But there's a lot to like there. The kid is blazing fast for 6'2". I mean, with his size and speed, he's going to be a nightmare for ACC defenses. There's also another guy that we have to mention that just recently moved to the is in the process of moving.
yeah, we have John to be Frank. Delicate with how we talk about this.
Yeah, you know, you got John Franklin, who is the quarterback, who's running through quarterback drills at the beginning and then running through wide receiver drills in the middle and then running walkthroughs as both. So he's going to stay at quarterback for now. At least that's what Jimbo says, but they're preparing him to become a wide receiver. So don't be surprised if you see him playing some wide receiver sometime this season.
And you talk about another guy that could take a ball to the house really quickly. You know, I was actually talking to Fisher about John Franklin a few weeks ago, and Franklin is, you know, Fisher was talking about, you know, well, nobody like Kermit in terms of, you know, nobody's Kermit fast, but John Franklin is that next level where, you know, nobody's Kermit fast, but then there's, you know, Franklin right there, sort of at that next level. And you look at, you know, he had what, the 17th fastest 60 meter time among NCAA football players this last year. I mean, he made the ACC outdoors in the 100 meters and made the finals there in the ACC outdoors in the 100 meters. This is a kid that can really, really fly. Now, of course, you know, at the quarterback position, that might be called an asset. But, you know, at the same time, in Fisher's offense, you have to have elite level anticipation to be able to really get the most out of Fisher's offense. And that's really the question as far as Franklin's concerned. But, you know, what they do know is that he's among the best athletes on the team. And there's no use if he's the third guy right now. You know, you can continue to give him quarterback reps, but there's no use to just let him sit and rot if you can, you know, potentially get some big plays out of him at that third quarterback role. But, you know, when you put him in at the receiver position or whatever. And again, I think long term, that's where we wind up seeing Franklin end up moving.
And also the dynamic of all the trick plays you can run with, you know, backup quarterback as a wide receiver.
Oh, yeah. And I actually think he's a guy that could potentially become one of your punt return options down the line. Something people don't really realize about quarterbacks is that they usually have among the best hands on the team because they're so used to catching the football with their hands. It's just you have to learn as a wide receiver. You have to learn how to catch the ball in the different angles and sort of the weird spots and with the kind of contact and things that you have to deal with as a receiver. That's different, but they're used to handling the ball so much and catching with their hands that they usually have great hands. So, you know, you look at your Antoine Randall L's and your Cordell Stewart's and those guys, they're able to make that transition pretty quickly because quarterbacks typically can catch the football. And I think he's a guy that, you know, down the line you could potentially see returning punts as well. So, you know, it's an interesting and intriguing prospect there. We can then we need to transition and talk a little bit then in this next segment about the running back position, which is another position where Florida State is absurdly loaded, and even more so having just gotten a commit from arguably the best running back prospect in the country in Frazier from North Carolina. Where, you know, the kid is, he is a true, I'm hesitant to call him this, but, you know, in terms of that people may understand, I'm hesitant. I don't like the terminology, but he's a true SEC style tailback at, you know, he's going to be 220 pounds when he arrives, probably 230. He'll probably play at 230 to 235 and still be a breakaway guy at that kind of speed, at that kind of weight. So that's another guy for next year. But already on this roster, you've got Carlos Williams, you've got Mario Pender, you've got Cook, and then you've got Green. It's a filthy rich roster, and it's a team that didn't run the ball all that much last year because they didn't need to, but they were successful when they did. And two, you send two guys to the NFL at running back, and you get better.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Carlos, there's a lot to like about Carlos.
Understatement, I mean, there really is.
You compare him to Gurley of Georgia. Now, I'm not saying that he's going to be as good as Gurley.
I think he may be.
But, like, there's areas that he has the advantage over Gurley. Is he doesn't have the injury concerns, and he doesn't have the mileage. You got to remember, Carlos is, like, at this time last year, Carlos was a safety. He wasn't a running back. He hadn't even practiced at running back until about a couple, like maybe a week or two before the season started. They finally got him to move over. But
the other thing is that Jimbo Fisher, when he tells a kid that he can play a position in recruiting, he's going to hold to his word. And that's one of the things it's worth bringing in. I saw a quote from Dana Holgorsen earlier this week. Where let me see if I can find this quote. It was really interesting to see Holgorsen say it,
everybody lies in recruiting.
Yeah, he says, everybody lies in recruiting. Yeah,
well,
here he goes.
Case,
he says,
maybe
you lie.
He needs to lie a little bit better because his team is on the downward slope.
Yeah, he says, you lie in recruiting a bunch. That's just part of it. You become a salesman. And I found that really interesting because, you know, in talking to Fisher about this, Fisher says there's one cardinal rule in recruiting above all else, the one thing that you never, ever, ever do, and that's lie. Which is really interesting to see that juxtaposition where Holgorsen says that and then Fisher says the other. Now, you could say, well, Fisher's just lying about not lying, but they wanted Carlos Williams at running back from the moment he stepped on campus. And it wasn't until last year, right before the season, that he finally moved because they're not forcing those sorts of things. And I think the Franklin situation is going to wind up being similar to that. So that ends up being a nice segue, where you know they're not going to force a guy to switch. But at the same point, they've had an awfully good record with the guys that they've asked to change positions. And ultimately have done that with guys like Cam Irving and Xavier Rhodes and some of these guys that have switched positions and have had tremendous success at that other position. So I think Carlos will be the next in that line, but just goes to show that they've actually been honest with these kids when they've said, listen, if you want to play safety, you'll play safety. We'd love for you to play running back if that doesn't pan out, but we're recruiting you as a safety or we're recruiting you as a quarterback. It's very interesting to see that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just, you know, it's an interesting dynamic, and it's going to show kids that they're going to get their shot where they're going to play. It's kind of like Kyle Oxley, the kid that's committed to Florida State from Maryland, actually the Maryland offensive coordinator's son, but he's coming in to play quarterback, and Florida State and Jimbo said that he's going to come in and they're going to let him play quarterback. Now, the kid's an athlete and will probably make a better wide receiver than he would make a quarterback, but they're going to give him a chance. But moving on to the other running backs, this is where it gets really interesting because you don't really know what you have, but there's just so much talent. You're finally getting to see Mario Pender.
That may be the most exciting thing about the first game is getting to see Mario Pender's first few carries and what that kid may do.
If you haven't had the pleasure of watching Mario Pender's high school film, stop what you're doing and go watch it because it'll make you cry. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, and this
he's just a fantastic athlete. He can fly. I mean, he's a great running back. And it took him a while to finally get it into his head. But from what I've heard, this will be his third straight semester on the academic honor roll, which is a complete 180 from the two semesters of academic probation he was on at the beginning.
Well, he seems to me to be on the Kelvin Benjamin plan, where you know those guys were both brought in, and you know I won't mince words here. They were bad guys. They were bad kids. They're the kind of kids that you know you're taking a risk with when you bring them onto campus, but they're just so good, and so talented that you're going to take the risk with one or two of those guys per year. You can't take more than that. I mean, this is the Jimbo Fisher knucklehead rule that, you know, you can bring in one, maybe two knuckleheads in a given recruiting class, but that's it. If you bring in more than one or maybe two every so often, and they better be worth it. If you bring in more than that, then, you know, eventually you're going to lose your locker room, because those kids are going to multiply. They're going to find each other, and they're going to multiply. What he says is you need enough good kids on your team to make sure that when you bring the knucklehead in, that they're the ones that reform. And those are guys, you know, Kelvin Benjamin as a freshman was a totally different kid than last year. I mean, interviewing him last year was such a pleasure because he was just a different guy than the guy that showed up as a freshman at Florida State. And he's a guy that's going to be successful in the NFL because he's transitioned. He's a different kid. And it seems like Pender may be on that Kelvin Benjamin plan to learn how to do this stuff, you know, a little bit late, mature a little bit late, but suddenly become not just productive, you know, on the field, but learn how to do things off the field as well, and be, you know, that all plays together.
Yeah, I mean, he's the thing about, you know, Mario is for the past, like, since fall camp started, Mario is never without a smile on his face. Like, he reminds me of Jameis so much. Like, not, you know, obviously not in body type or anything like that, but he can't keep the smile off his face. He's always out there. He's always enjoying himself. He really does love the game of football. You can't, you know, teach that, guys. I mean,
and he runs so angry. That's the thing that sticks out about his high school tape. I mean, obviously he's got jets. I mean, he actually won more 100-meter matchups against Sammy Watkins than he lost, which that tells you how fast this kid is. I mean, that's serious. But the thing is, when you watch his tape, he runs angry. You know, he gets the ball and he wants to try to run over, run through, and run around. I mean, he just runs angry, and that kind of back. And it's just fun to watch those guys run. You can tell he loves the game. He loves to play.
He does. And now those guys, Carlos and Pender, are your one and two. It's after that where it gets a little bit more interesting. Right now, Ryan Green is losing his shot because he has a hamstring injury, and Dalvin Cook ain't giving it back. He's like, he's out there. Carlos absolutely raved about him in his post scrimmage interview that we did with him today. He said he knows what he's doing. He's got the playbook down. He knows how to do the flare routes. He knows, you know, he knows proper technique in pass blocking. Dalvin Cook has a stranglehold on that third string running back spot, and Ryan Green's looking on, you know, he's falling a little bit. He's on the outside looking in right now. He really needs to get back to practice.
Yeah, it's just a matter of time for Green in terms of that. You know, he's going to get some carries. You know, it'd be interesting to see if Pender has the year that he could have this year, whether he decides to go pro. You know, again, the Kelvin Benjamin plan, have that one breakout year and then all of a sudden go pro. At that point, you know, Green becomes one of the elder statesmen on campus and, you know, potentially has more of a shot. But, you know, you got so much talent arriving with, you know, probably Frazier, who just committed. And then obviously Patrick, who seems to be most likely to wind up in Tallahassee as well. They're going to want their shots as well right away. And they'll contend for early playing time.
They'll be the only two big backs on the roster once Carlos leaves. They'll have their shot.
Oh yeah, they'll get plenty of carries.
Yeah, Ryan Green's going to have to compete with Pender, who'll be here another year after this one, and Dalvin Cook, who will be, you know, already ahead of him. So Pender, you know, our Green. What people don't realize is that Green was an excellent corner in high school.
That was what I was going to go for.
Yeah, you might see him. You know, he might see the writing on the wall and move over to the defense.
Yeah, I mean, he's a terrific athlete, and he's a guy that could be a very good slot receiver. You know, he'd be a little bigger slot receiver, but, you know, he's got that ability, and he catches the football very well. But he also could be, you know, an outstanding corner. And there's going to be probably a need at corner after this year with Darby and Williams most likely winding up in the not for long, you know, after this season. So, you know, that would be an interesting potential move. You know, I don't know when exactly that might happen. It would be hard to do that next spring given the body count, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I mean, obviously it's an untimely hamstring injury there for him, but you know, that's camp. I mean, hamstrings are a part of camp, and actually Darby and PJ right now are both being held out because of hamstrings, which is, again, that's pretty standard.
I mean, absolutely. He's he's a fantastic athlete, and you really you can't help, you know, when you get injured. But it's like you said, it's really, really untimely for him because right now, you know, Dalvin Cook's just showing out, which everybody knew that he would do, because he's just that good of a running back in general and that good of a football player.
Well, the footage of him beating Carlos Williams in those foot races was significant because everybody who's watched Florida State over the past few years knows that Carlos can really move. And Jimbo was saying, actually, with Cook, at 40 yards, he's a stride ahead of Carlos. At 60, he's you know, a couple yards ahead. And at 100, he's walking. So and that's against Carlos. So, you know, Cook can move pretty well. And that brings up the last thing that we'll really talk about in terms of this particular podcast. But one of the things that's interesting about this particular set of players is, yeah, with Carlos, you got a 235-pound back, but, you know, he's a home run hitter. Then you've got the other three. They're really all home run hitters. And then you've got a set of receivers that are all pretty much home run hitter. You know, this offense is I think, slated to be one of the biggest, one of the groups that will put out the most big plays of any group you may ever see. I mean, last year's offense was very consistent, and they were the most productive offense in NCAA history in terms of points scored. But this offense actually is going to be, I think, significantly more explosive than last year's offense. When we're talking about running backs just hitting a crease and going the distance, I think we're going to see, you know, probably triple the number of 60 plus yard runs from the running game this year that we did last year. And you know, that's contingent on good blocking from the receivers, but that's something Dossie won't tolerate not having. And then the receiver group, when you've got a group with, you know, Bobo and Kermit and Rashad Green and some of these other guys, these game breakers, they're going to have bigger plays than what you saw. So I think you're going to see the transition into a little bit more of a big play offense this year than what you saw last year, which paradoxically is going to come from more like two tight end sets, like you mentioned with Ermine Lane being the single receiver in a two tight end set. They've got the tight ends to run more two tight end sets, and they're going to be doing that. They're going to be more of a power based offense. They'll run the ball more than they did last year, but those runs are going to turn into more big plays and more play action down the field. You know, what you saw from Alabama last year and the year prior, where, you know, they're running it, and then all of a sudden throw over the top. That kind of thing is, I think, what you're going to see more from the offense this year than last year. And I don't know if that's something that you've heard from anybody in practice about at this point, but that's just sort of what, you know, I'm foreseeing as happening here. Now, obviously, you're going to miss Kelvin Benjamin. You know, Fisher was kind of kidding around at ACC kickoff about, you know, how, you know, you put Benjamin on this particular team and how scary that would have been. But, you know, you're going to miss Benjamin, but otherwise I just think the offense is going to be that much more explosive.
Oh, I completely agree. And while I and every other Florida State fan out there loved Kenny Shaw, he wasn't winning any foot races. I mean, let's be honest. He was the most consistent wide receiver, but he's nowhere near what you would call explosive.
Now, and then you're trading him for Kermit.
Yeah, well, I mean, what you're trading is consistency for, you know, game breaking ability, and, you know, sometimes, you know, it's good to have one, and sometimes it's good to have the other. But I absolutely agree with you. You're going to see a lot of big plays. And I think that Jameis is going to, like when he's throwing the football, you're going to see either big plays or dump downs. Like there's not going to be any in between. Because last year, Jameis held the ball way too long, trying to go for the big plays. And I think that
nice to Jimbo, have the offensive line to be able to do that, isn't it?
It's very nice to have the offensive line to be able to do that. But Jimbo's trying to rein that in a little bit, and you can tell with that from the way you know they work in practice. But and Jameis has said it himself; he's got to learn to check down. So I think you're going to see a lot more check downs, but also a lot more big plays when it comes to that. And you're going to see a lot of big plays in the running game as well, because while Devontae Freeman is probably one of the, you know, all-time most likable Knowles out there, you know, he wasn't going to win very many foot races either. He's not the fastest guy out there. He's a quick guy, and he's probably the best pass-blocking running back I've ever seen in my life. But he's not the most explosive running back out there.
Yeah, he's going to be a few yards behind Carlos and Pender and Cook and Green when you know out in the open field.
Yeah, those first three guys, Carlos, Pender, and Cook, are not getting run down from behind by anybody. Devontae would get run down, but I also think that you see like the one guy that we haven't talked about for the offense that's going to be in kind of the Kenny Shaw role, but he plays a different position. It's going to be tight end Nick O'Leary. He's going to be the safety valve this year. He's going to be what, you know, Kenny was last year. The guy who's always in the right spot. I mean, you know, Nick O'Leary isn't going to win any foot races either. So you've got him. He'll just run people over, just as Tallahassee native Travis Blanks for Clemson. But, you know, you've got him to check down to. You've got the running backs to check down to. And then you have the big play wide receivers that are going to make it, you know, they're going to make it very, very tough on defenses.
Yep. Well, I think we can wrap this one on that. And, you know, on the offensive side, there's obviously a lot to look forward to. Should be an exciting season for Florida State fans. Be interesting to see some of the differences between this year and last and how much a guy like Benjamin actually winds up being missed. You know, the freshman again came in, you know, the one thing Fisher has repeated over and over again is that in particular Lane and Rudolph came in and were just able to pick things up really rapidly. And that's key in his offense. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this all carries out. But that's all the time we have for this episode. On behalf of Wayne McGahee and the whole Knoll Digest staff, I'm Jason Staples. Thank you for listening to the Unconquered podcast. We'll talk to you soon. I made this.